grain of rice, a grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Hello, people out there. Hope you're all keeping the sunny side out. Difficult times, we keep saying every week. But think you're playing a stormer anyway. 99% of people are playing a stormer. I know everyone is getting itchy feet. And it looks like we might be in for a little extended period of lockdown. But look, if we have to, I think we have to go by what we're told. I know we've different opinions on it, but I think it's important that we keep debts to a minimum anyway. And that's not me now. That's just a personal opinion. I'm not representing anyone on that. So we're trying to lighten your day for you here a little bit if we can. And trying to come up with new topics every week. So join today. Hopefully Mark Landers might be able to join us in a while. We're having a bit of problem getting through to him there. Wi-Fi everywhere is a problem, but I kind of been saying over the last few weeks that if CNN and Sky News are breaking down, we're entitled to break down a small bit here on the Irish Examiner podcast. So if there's a bit of sound trouble at any stage, lads, it's down to Wi-Fi in Limerick. Are you at work today, TJ?
I'm at work today, Dilo, yeah. Thankfully, we are still rolling, so obviously playing by the rules.
How are you making up stuff to do, TJ?
Tricky one, Dilo, but kind of a lifetime of Conan people. And you know, when you have a name for getting up early in the morning, you can stay in bed all day, Dilo, as you know yourself.
Well, I kind of got the wrong end of that, you see, from the get-go. No matter how early I get up, I'd have been able to stay in bed all day. The fucking bed stacked is worse, stuff. Anyway, but yeah. Look, it's great to have you out there, whoever's listening to us. And I know as the weeks go on, podcasts are becoming more and more popular because people are trying to get in their exercise and they're getting the earbuds in. So today we thought we'd look at maybe a few different things, maybe how the game has changed and from when we played and indeed when we managed, even TJ, that. From now till back then, how things have changed, maybe even the life of a county player and the whole technology and maybe how different counties have an advantage with their financial backing. I know there's been so much made out of Dublin, more towards their footballers than their hurlers. Thank God, from my point of view, I didn't ever get too much grief. But I presume if we'd won one All-Ireland, we'd have got loads of it. The difference is there and what's happening and what you'd actually want as a team manager. I know we are different and right back to the basics, TJ. Did you, just off the top of my head, did you wear an earpiece while you were on the line?
I did a bit of both, Dilo. There were some games I just didn't want it. And in other games, if I was looking for specific things and I wanted the wording straight away. So we did have the technology and it was available to us. I suppose it's down to the individual, really, and who you're speaking to and how much you can rely on them. You don't want somebody in nine you during the game, but so much happening on the line now on any given day. I think having it is a help because you can just be made aware of the smallest little things that can affect the game. But just to go back to the start, the game probably is still the same, Dale, as we all know. It's still 15-15 with 3 points for a goal in the scores and the county versus county, club versus club. But certainly the preparation and the approach by teams has changed massively. Probably since the turn of the century, it really has kicked on with the S&C, nutrition, analysis, psychology, stats. It's just gone bananas and probably getting worse from that side of it.
Worse or better?
It depends. I think you can get hung up on a lot of stuff. As I said, the fundamentals are still the same. Your game plan has to be executed well by your players. It still comes down to that. You still have to have ability. It's very hard to win games without that. So you can get hung up on an awful lot of stuff, but you probably have to say that the modern managers, the modern coaches are refining this to a really, really good place. And I think it's making the game better. That'd be my opinion.
Yeah. I the way I would have operated on the line always, the bloody 9 years I did it, some years where the pillars should have been telling me I should have bought my ears stuffed with cotton wool, maybe, with the way I was doing things. But I used to have two guys that I really trusted as kind of knowledgeable, and especially in the Clare years, because I'd have more of a feeling for who was there. In Dublin, when I went up, it was all very new to me. But I had two guys who weren't selectors, right? But they were two guys that I would say I would have run anything by. I probably would have played with both of them in various guises, one from my own club, one from another club, but I would have played with him county. And what I had them is them linked up to somebody on the line. And I wouldn't wear it myself because I found it too much of a distraction. Do you know that fella's into your ear? But what I would get them to relate to one of my selectors who I trusted would, I suppose, you know, take the information and maybe, like, one of the things I would have said, you know, just coax in a modern manager, a fella who's still involved at the moment, was he'd say, look, don't be throwing data at me. Give me a solution, because I'm trying to work out solutions anyway myself. So I don't need you coming out to say, and I think there's a problem, we'll say, at left half back or at centre back. And you come up to me to say, corner back, he's gone, you know, way off any stats here. Have we not, you know, come to me and maybe say, let's swap the corner back and wing back, you know, and things like that. And that's a whole interesting thing. It was probably a bit different in Dublin, but I would have let Richie Slakem wear the earpiece from the stats people. And I found that he never bothered me when he felt maybe at times when, you know, the way you're arguing a toss, TJ, on a line ball or something, and you're yes. head up a bit. And next thing you're trying to cool yourself down and get back in the game. And the next thing something is saying to you, look, number seven is in huge trouble here. Very hard to bring your thoughts and your mind back down to that moment. So you need people you trust around you, I think, on that situation.
You do. And Dela, like, how much do you go with stats versus your gut at times in the moment? That's a difficult one. And just what you said there, like, you can have a cornerback whose stats are in trouble, right, because he's getting beat two or three balls. But the problem really probably is outside the field where your guys aren't getting tackles in, and there's guys in the half-back line in the opposition placing beautiful ball in front of any cornerback, and he won't be able to defend it. So I suppose that's where the whole idea of the amount of stats and how you use them on a given day, that is a tricky one for any manager. And I suppose we all have different traits as to how to do that. And then at teams today, like the tackle, that's a huge one. Like, definitely in hurling, what is a tackle? Like, how do you define a tackle? If you wanted to count your team's tackles today, they're like, is it a hook? Is it a block? Is it a token challenge? Is it a contact? And I suppose that's where you have to get your stats team together, everyone kind of feeding into the one piece that you're driving, and you have to drive the stats that you really want against a certain opposition. Like, turnovers is a big word at the moment, like in hurling, and trying to get scores and turnovers. But, like, you could be on top of an opposition, your turnover count might be down, but the reason your turnover count is down is because you're mind in position so well, that stat is reading really, really well, and basically your turnover is down. So you have to be able to use the stats in a way that you want on a given day. Some of the stats, Dale, as you well know, are as useful as a handbrake in a canoe.
An ashtray and a motorbike. I'm learning all these ones as the podcasts are going on over the few weeks. Yeah, and even at that, you know what? Going back, involved at club level, you know, even with Crokes and back with our own young lads this year, you know, even young lads would come to you and say, what's a turnover, Dela? What do you define as a turnover? Or, you know, what is a good tackle? Not even a turnover. We all know a turnover would get the ball technically back to your team. But, you know, we often try to define it, I suppose, with lads that I trust with working with, but that you turn a player back towards his own goal and make him play the ball. You know, so a good corner forward, yes, who's working hard, that he would make the corner back, instead of letting him pass him or fouling him, that he would force him back towards his own goal and make him play the ball, even if that was back to his goalie, but that he, or try and clear it over his shoulder, that he would make him even do that. And that was the best way I could nearly simplify it for the lads who were in question of that. Like, do they mean ripping possession from a guy so we have the ball so I can set up a score? And I said, look, if you can do that, for me, it's nearly a double turnover, do you know? But for basic stuff that you want to break it down to what you can do in terms of work rate, that's how I defined it for them. I think that was the best way I could do it. And, you know, often wonder, look, we both managed against him. I had the luxury of playing with him. And often the guy who's looked at out there as the king of, you know, using stats, using tactics, using all that, I suppose Derek McGrath was maybe up there as well in terms of where people thought and I know Don Logue is managing the Cork Miners issue, but he'd been coaching and he, you know, on the Sunday game, I suppose he would be the king of that sort of stuff. But, you know, you often wonder how Davey would, he must have people around him that he really trusts on that, because we know how involved Davey gets on the line with every play, you know, between questioning calls and that, especially earlier years in his management. I'd say later years, he's more tranquil at times, all right, but you'd have to say there has to be a kind of backup set up there that would he'd definitely trust very strongly.
Yeah, and then if we even take the stats, right, like for someone like a Davey, right, how much is his own stats as important to how much is the opposition stats? Is he, who he's playing next week, right? How much does he buy into all the stats that they've gathered for the opposition, right? And who's the key player? I think Davey does a little bit more of that than maybe a lot of some of the other managers. I think he really goes after, I suppose, the kind of king of the opposition, and he kind of makes sure he shuts them down. And like if you look at, I suppose, maybe the modern game, I think about approximately 30% of scores that teams get comes from their own puckouts, 15% from the opposition puckout, and the remainder comes from turnovers. So that middle third, where most of these teams today, right, are just really, really savage and going after getting those turnovers and turning them into scores, that appears to be an awful lot of the winning and losing the games today. Now, sometimes it can be hard to watch, but my belief, I think, is if we educate all the people that are watching games and see, like, look at the game plans, see what the opposition are trying to do, see where the two game plans are coming together, see why they're doing what they're doing, like, I think you'll enjoy the game more.
Yeah, and we mentioned off the air, in fairness, you mentioned off the air that, you know, the Sunday game, and I wrote about it last Monday, the way it works up there, and that I think it'd be very hard to change that Sunday night concept, because, you know, you have people at the game, come home from the games, want to see whether they're right or not on certain things, how did the fella play, and you won't really see that in the highlights package, but you might see the little, the technical things, but there is a huge space there, but of course it's not allowed, as I understand it, on rights to show stuff. You know, I know TG Garr have a great highlight show on Monday night, but it's very much covering the games that are not shown, but that there would be massive space for, you know, we all see it on Sky Sports, on Monday night football, you know, where you have Carragher and Neville going through the real topics that they feel really swung the game and where the game was won and lost. That'd be something that'd be massively welcomed by GAA people everywhere in the country, I think.
Yeah, and I think a lot of sports have changed, and I suppose depending on what sport you're watching, like for me, something like horse racing, right, the time will tell now, watching the splits and the furlongs and the time of a race. Like if you watch tennis matches, you can see all the stats, percentages of serves in, whether it's golf or the Masters you're watching, Dale, or how many greens in regulation they've hit, how many putts they've had. I think there's so much more there. Like in the GAA, we probably talk about some simple ones like how many scores somebody got or how many frees they've hit or how many wides they hit. But like things like who had the most assists in the championship last year, how many possessions, who's hitting the big possessions in the middle of the field, what is a midfielder possession-wise expected to hit 24, 25, 26 possessions, who's off the charts. I think that type of stuff would bring like something like the Sunday game further. I do think there's a lot of people who'd like to see it, and I do think it gives you a better picture. Like I know from my side, being at a game and being involved in the game, a bit like yourself, Dale, sometimes you get animated and maybe after the game, I might be giving on about a particular player, right? But then I look at the stats and say, geez, he had 12 or 13 possessions. And even being involved, really deeply involved in the game, there can be stuff that can surprise you afterwards. And I just think for the viewer, I think that it can go so far. Like if you look at the NFL and check any player online today, and you can find out about tackles and sacks and passing yards and interceptions and running yards and touchdowns and stuff like that. And I just think that some people say to me today about can the GAA or the hurling go any further. I actually think it can. I think there's so much more information. And I do think that the players want this, and I do think they buy into it. I think they like it, and I think it's the next phase of what's coming.
Yeah, and you know what? An awful lot of our opinion is clouded by, I won't say just pub talk, you know, but so much of that, you know, you will retire for a pint maybe. Some people might find themselves doing it on the Monday after reading the papers or whatever. They'll go into the local place, the local butchers maybe even, or there's always a place in every village, isn't there, where the match has been dissected the following day or that night. And an awful lot can be easy, soft talk, you know, that a very prominent player, like it's, you know, they don't see as much of him as, you know, I saw a comment on somebody, I think it was Mara Trasini Kelly on some forum, made a comment about, you know, they're doing their four big guys or big people over the history for each county. And she was doing Galway. And she says, it's got to the point with Joe Canning is if he doesn't get 212, he hasn't had a good game. You know, and I think there's a whole lot out there that if we could break down what the Joe Cannings, let's say the Keane Lynch's, the Tony Kelly's, the Austin Gleason's, what they're actually doing in various games. And they're probably doing an awful lot more in terms of running, and if we could see their GPS stats and all that, it would make for far more accurate conversation. Not that sometimes that's always the best thing as well, as everyone saying, well, I'm right because this is the stats. Do you know? That used to drive me demented as well, because you have to interpret what each player is capable of as well. Would you feel that as well? There's somewhere a happy medium in between there.
Yeah, and I think even, like, if you look at a corner forward today, like, how many real good goal, like, possessions will he get in the game? Like, you're expecting a lot of scores, but, like, you might only get, in an average game, might only get 8 to 10 possessions, like 4 or 5 each half, where he just has the ball in full possession. And I do agree with you. Like, it was good to see TJ Reid last year. I think he got man of the match maybe on 2 occasions where he actually didn't score from play. But his work rate, his general work, and everything he was doing for the team, he was literally carrying them. So at least it is being recognised by the likes of yourself, because you said you are seeing it more in the Sunday game. But I still think that there's more. As I said, I do like watching that Monday night soccer thing there, even though I'm not a huge soccer fan, about how teams set up, how the game plan works, the possession, the assists. The two Liverpool fullbacks at the moment, a lot of talk about the amount of assists that they have. I do think in hurling that there's a lot more that can be brought to the table that the general viewer out there would like to see, and definitely would become more knowledgeable, as with game plans. I think if before a game, if you said, this is how I expect Clare to set up, this is how I expect Waterford to set up, this is where the interesting battles, we can just do more of that, and I think it'll bring better. We probably had been used to the traditional 1-15, and I suppose there's an awful lot of people out there who expect number 2 to be marking number 15 and number 6 to be marking number 11. But we well know that a lot of that is gone.
Yeah, and like I think there would be a massive appetite, and you're dead right. I think, and all these things are obviously viewership is what carries the day on a lot of things. But I think you'd have a massive viewership on a Monday night. You know, people home after the weekend and the first day back to work, and the whole Monday syndrome doesn't be great at times after championship matches. And I think, you know, that they'd love it. I think they'd love it to relax after the day's work is done and look back over the match and dissect it and all that. Just back to, you know, the way, I suppose, in my time anyway, managing, and I saw both sides of it, I suppose, being involved with Limerick as well. And then Dublin was probably more high-tech than Clare as well, in terms of with more availability of stuff on stats and video stuff. It was easier to get hold of that stuff anyway. Maybe it was just matching up to the footballers, as I said earlier. But very much changed now to the kind of iPad system where, and I often told the story how funny it was, like we used to use with Limerick, because they used to use the same system they had in LIT, which Clare were using as well, I think, was the green, amber and red system, where if a guy was going really well, he'd have big green amber, he was winning a ball, his man might be winning the ball, and a fellow was red and he was getting nearly purple if he was going very bad. I often told the story about one of the best tests that Clare 3 in a row under 21 team got was against Tip one night in Ennis. They were really in trouble and Peter Duggan was not going well at wing forward, and only he was winning his puck outs, and who they had wing back was matching him, and that's where Dougie's big strength would be in a lot of ways. But there was a massive long range free, and the stats crowd were sending down a massive amount of stuff, you know. That Dougie was in huge trouble, maybe shifting full, whatever. But the boys just stuck him into the edge of the square for this long range free. And of course, Dougie, as he can do, just one handed, doubled on the roof of the net, whole complexion of the game. I'd nearly have broken the iPads at that moment. Like, you know, but I think that's where good management has to come into play as well, that you use them to back up where your gut is telling you. And the days of ticking boxes are probably gone. Like, I also just witnessed another bit of a horror show. I won't say where, I won't say when, but where we had conceded a goal, the team I was involved with, and this technology was down with the laptops in the dressing room, you know. And there was a guy in the back room, really, got the two guys that were involved in the concession of the goal. Like, but just say it was a cornerback and a wingback or a fullback and a centre-back. I don't want to go into the specifics now. But he actually called the two of them over. Kind of, I only copped it right at the end, and he said, come here, do you see this? I showed it to him at half time. Like, I nearly lost it, I have to say, when I found out about it. But it'll tell you how dangerous it can be as well, that whole technology area.
Yeah, and like, I think that with all those stats, even like live, you're trying to talk about there on the sideline, how do you process that? How can you change a game plan, which is difficult halfway through a game? But I do know that, like, after a game, like, that some of the modern main statisticians are spending approximately 40 hours a week there, hard to believe, dissecting a game fully, looking at your team and the opposition team, right? And that's even before you're probably even, maybe some of the viewers have to think about GPS vests when a player take off his jersey. Some players are wearing hat monitors as well. Like, where does all that feed into? But like knowledge is power, and like the SNC guys, the stats guys, like even though it mightn't be hugely effective today's game, it's all feeding into maybe a season-long stats in a given player, what ground he's covering, how he's performing, his sprint distances, his overall distances. And I think all that gathering of information is huge in the modern game. You really have to see it. If you sat in a room with just one of these guys, like let's say the guy who's looking after Suffolk Limerick at the moment, right, you would be astounded the minute information that would be available on every single player. It's mind-blowing.
How would you get in there with Sean O'Donnell, TJ?
I'm sure, Dillo, if you give Sean a shout, he'll bring you and show you. But he's one of the top guys at it at the moment. He's been hugely important to the Limerick setup over the last couple of years. And I suppose it's a part of the game that maybe that we would have been behind them for a while. Limerick have really, really, really gained by having someone like him. But there are some really, really good people that are doing this around the country now. And it's becoming, I'd say, into the club scene now. You see more and more clubs videoing games. You see more stats. Like for myself, they're involved with Thomas is there for the last couple of years. Yeah. It's a guy there, really, really, really good at it. Some of the stats he gives you, he spends a huge amount of time at it. And I suppose just for like a lot of people out there, like after you play a game and you're going home from your club game this evening, Dale, and you're happy that you won by a point, and then you're at home having the cup of tea there at 8 o'clock and you see the stats and you're going, Jesus, I didn't realise that. And it can change your mind about how you approach and some of the training. And then I suppose using those stats as to maybe some of your weaknesses or some areas, that's kind of nearly organising training if you're for the next week or two in areas you need to improve on. And that's just basically the way the current coaches and designing new training sessions to come up with solutions to the problems you're having on the field. And I suppose that's what the stats guys are feeding into. The stats guy, the coach is chatting, this will need to do better. And it's having a huge impact on the way teams are approaching games.
Yeah, and we mentioned Shawnee there, and I know he's very well. I don't know him at all now. I know he's a club mate of yours, but I know he's very well thought of, and that, and an interesting one in that. Just keep the little bit of the Limerick angle going. I'm not trying to nail Limerick on it now, but they're obviously probably were favourites for the All Ireland if we get to play it and that kind of thing. And they were champions 2 years ago. But obviously, one of the things as well from trying to, when I was involved there with the academy, was, you know, get the odd chat with Paul Kinnerick, who's obviously a superb guy, and like Kinnerick, like telling me like that he wouldn't watch the replay of a game at all. No way, unless it was the behind the goals camera angle, do you know? And you see the Limerick, you know, always, you know, every county nearly does it that way now anyway. But Kinnerick just, no way, I'd have no interest in looking at it. He said, I've seen it. I've watched it. I might have a quick look at that on Sunday evening. I might look at G in the Sunday game, he says. But then when I'm sitting down Monday to do that I just want to see the behind the goal. And I'm wondering, like, and you mentioned it there, TJ, like, leading in then to, you know, have some counties just gone ahead where there's no real chance for maybe some counties? I suppose it's more special in football where you have a massive range. All 32 kind of fancy themselves as did, you know, they're talking this year, well, we run off to hurling. Maybe, you know, there's possibility talk of the Joe McDonagh finalists wouldn't get into the Liam McCarthy as such for 1 year. And we'd have maybe a straight old form and that kind of. But in the football, there's talk of an open draw where all 32 would go into a hat and that kind of thing. And I suppose the gaps just get bigger. And you mentioned there, TJ, like 40 hours a week, maybe some of these guys. Like, but like we know the top two in hurling at the moment, perceived anyway, I suppose, from the last 2 years, are Tipperary and Limerick. And we know the financial backing that's there. Like, and are they just getting further and further ahead of the posse? Like, is it how can you have like this, what they talk about, a high performance culture without actually having high performance people like Shawnee O'Donnell? Do you know, I don't know the various people. I mean, I was very lucky in Dublin. Well, I never had really questions asked about I Denise Martin, and then I had a great girl from Waterford, Jenny Cody, who was based in Dublin. But I never really had to worry about that end of it. You know, Dublin were great that way. But is there counties? I mean, just say, is there counties in football that are just saying, look, we're not, the days of these breakthroughs, like, you know, let's say Leitrim winning Connacht in 94, that this isn't going to happen anymore because they're gone so far behind the Mayos. We know Mayo and Kerry would have a massive... look, and I'm not from Asian here, I hope. Just they would have a massive overseas diaspora over there that they tap into every year. You know, the Kerry boys go to New York and Boston every year there. The Darrow O'Shea's, the Mikey Sheedy's, and they come home with a couple of good dinner dances and speeches, and they rally round, and there's a good few dollars put into the system. And, you know, our county's just at a different level now, I'm wondering. You know, that the other counties just can't compete?
No, the answer to the question is yes, there are. Like, if you look at all sports, look at soccer and Premiership, the teams with the most money, they can make the better preparations. Rugby is the same. A lot of sports are the same. Horse racing, the big stables where the big money is, they have the more success. And it's gone a little bit like that in hurling and football. The amount of money that it costs to prepare a team, and you're kind of saying, what can money do for a team, right? Well, I suppose, first of all, if you take maybe even just starting with the S&C side of it, building early, giving guys the platform, whether that's in the form of gym memberships or access to a gym, and all that unfortunately costs money. The GPS data, the heart monitors, monitoring all that. If you take a heart monitor on a player at training, you can effectively, on a laptop, assess how hard that player is working in training, and having all that available is giving that team more data. It doesn't guarantee you success.
Them heart data in training wouldn't want to be there now, there, kid.
No, we would have been probably, I think the red is where you're kind of really working your hardest. We wouldn't have been in the red that often. But I'm just saying, the availability of having training camps and having all this backroom team available, all that costs money. I know that's a tricky one for the GEA in an amateur game. But you go to things like psychology, even the whole PR behind the team. And as I said to you about, we knew here that the PR machine is out there. This team is working hard, it's training hard. It's good, giving off a good vibe. The county's getting behind it. Everyone's buying into it. But GPS systems, all those vests, all expensive. The updating software, it's gone that way. And there's no doubt for me that the finance behind those teams is a massive help. Anybody who tells you different, Dello, is not living in the real world.
Yeah, and I know even in Clare, before the lockdown, there's a side, a lot of counties have it. You hear about Club Tyrone and all, but there's a Club Clare now as well, headed up by great people. I know James's wife is involved there, Caroline, and the accountant side of it. But John Cairn, the ex-superintendent, and he'd be maybe the chairman of it. But they had two massive events planned, one in the West County in Ennis, where they were going to tie in maybe the 25-year Clare from 95 thing as a team for the night. But it was basically a fundraiser for Club Clare now, which not just the senior team, but they'd feed it right down to the juvenile efforts. And that's where county boards are nearly welcoming that sort of initiative now, that the county boards are seeing where there is a little bit of resistance to the old county board system of we have the county draw, an X amount will go back to the clubs and the rest goes into preparing the teams. Whereas you have the outside group, and there's a lot of companies and individuals who are really concerned about they want to keep Clare at the top table. And I know they'd also sold out a gig in the Four Seasons in Dublin for late April. I think it was maybe even last Friday or this Friday, we'd have been really having a good day out, TJ, in Dublin. But that's the boards are coming around now to welcoming that sort of thing, because they just mightn't have a Tenio or maybe the likes of a JP or Dublin with an AIG, that they are welcoming that side group that are willing to go away and raise that extra few quid.
Yeah, well, this Friday, Dello, I had a day planned in Punchestown. I was getting looked after up there, so I wouldn't have been this Friday. But just to what you're saying there, right, if you take a youngster, let's say 16, 17, into a minor setup at the moment, right, he just needs a platform in order for him to break onto the senior panel, right? You just won't come from nowhere, just as you said a while ago. If you haven't been following some form of a strength and conditioning program, no, you just get killed in the modern game. And I think, going back to the 90s, where we would have been told, you need to train harder, you need to do this harder, you need to do this, we would have been kind of driven to do that. The modern era now, right, is, yes, hard work is required, but things like your time off, your sleep, your eating, your exercise, how you go about your business, all those things are buying into the optimum performance. And that's where the game has changed massively. And that's where, I suppose, a few quid is required, allowing good S&C guys, good nutritionists, people understanding where people are at in terms of your job, your college, your career, buying all that in to find the future into county player. And that takes time and that takes money as well.
Yeah, and I suppose just got lucky to get for the 3 years involved with Limerick just to see the systems. It's not rocket science. I've said this loads of times, but just the old academy, and some people would be critical of that, but I think it just does identify guys early that really have the potential to kick on. Doesn't always come true. Other things, life comes in the way at times and that, but yeah, look, I think, people have, we're all very quick to, way back in the day, we ran up and down hills So everyone was running up and down a hill then, weren't they? Because if they're running up and down hills, we better run up and down hills. So it's changed, now to technology, I suppose. And just to take it to a different maybe angle, you know, the technology and things, you know, how we would have talked about it on our pods last year with yourself and maybe even with the guy's dad, even in Brian Hogan, and the tip goalie with Ken. And you know, the whole thing about the Hawkeye element and where we're gone and not having some of the aspects. Now, we have Hawkeye and Turles, but we don't really have it anywhere else. I know for the 17 quarterfinals when they played them in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, I suppose to give it the status it deserved, Páirc Uí Chaoimh with the new stadium, and that they kind of brought it in for the day. Probably cost a lot of money now. I know in Turles they estimate it cost $8,000 per big game to run it. But just, you know, some of the stuff last year, I mean, the John McGrath goal from the one Hogan took down, I think it was 21 seconds. John had the ball buried in the net at the other end, and the whole team was called back and a point given to Wexford. And, you know, it's a changed world, isn't it? You know, Mark even mentioned it 2 weeks ago when we were on about picking our Munster team of the year, about Joe Dean should be on it, and that goal against us in 99. And he was saying, was he in the square, wasn't he? And I said, Mark, my bake wasn't about him being in the square at all that day. It was when Johnny McGrath flicked the ball back in that it was gone wide. And I was sure it was gone wide because I was near enough to him. I wasn't actually marking him, I think, at the time. But and I would hold my hand up if I was. But I had a good view of it because I was near him. And I thought the ball was maybe a foot over the line and had gone wide. But stuff like that, I mean, where do you see that going at this stage? It's a source of real frustration, isn't it? I mean, in the sense that if Munster had gone ahead this year, you know, you'd have had, you know, Limerick and Clare and Ennis. Donald Toohey could have taken down one of those balls in Ennis, and it would be up to an umpire to call it. And if he was not Ireland semi-final, as we saw what happened Limerick last year. Now, that didn't come into play because that was a different thing. But Limerick did bring in a proposal to Congress about bringing in maybe a VAR system.
Yeah, and as just what we spoke about, there is a real strong chance that, let's say, the five teams in Munster, maybe all hurling counties in the Liam McCarthy, the margins are getting finer and finer. So you could really be coming down to a marginal call. And it doesn't seem fair that the Brian Hogan one, the point, would come into play in Croke Park and wouldn't come into a play, let's say, in a Munster final or a Munster semi-final. And we are coming down to some of those decisions. I suppose for the viewer out there and the general GAA fan and the follower, once the right decision is made, I do suppose we're accepting that at least the call was correct. And that's back to what you're saying there about Hawkeye and maybe something like, I know VAR has come in for a lot of criticism, and we probably all have given out about it, depending on who you follow. I know Spurs, he definitely had been the big benefactors of VAR.
Kuwait.
Correct, TJ.
Oh, yeah. Highbury's after breaking in there. Larry in the background again.
But if you look at it, to go back to something like a tennis, right, and a serve moving at 125 or 130 miles an hour, right, and there's maybe 2 or 3 millimetres in it, they're getting these decisions very much right. So, again, we all know, as in the words of Gabriel Byrne, that which is not evolving is dying. We definitely need to be moving to make sure all the decisions going forward are right. I do think you'll have less hassle if the decision is right. And some of the calls are really, really fine. I know we spoke very briefly about the sending off in the All-Ireland, and there is questions of Richie Hogan, who sent him off? Was it the linesman? Was it the referee? Was it upstairs? So is there a little bit of VAR in Croke Park? And no VAR anywhere else, Dale? You probably are maybe closer to the scene than I am.
Yeah, well, back to the red card for Richie Hogan. I don't think Johnny Murphy can be blamed anyway, if what we believe is right, that he said that there was a bit of play acting going on by Cahill until the blood was seen, I think. You know? But yeah, absolutely. And the big thing there being, for me, that Hogan took down the ball over the bar. We couldn't really see from where we were now in lifetime, and you couldn't really see from the camera either. But I mean, if that was under the bar, and I played in a semi-final of an All-Ireland club where our corner forward, Alan Neville, would have been a clear man at the time, and he scooped the ball into the net for Joherty to scoop it back out again. I think even Joe would admit that it was definitely over the line. But and even watching the video, you can nearly see it's over the line, but that wasn't there. And that wasn't even there last year. If that was a shot from, just say that was a shot from Lee Chin that Hogan had got his hurley to it, but it had spun back behind the line and he scooped it back out, that would have been down to the umpire again. And surely that's a complete anomaly, for the greatest stadium in Europe, one of the greatest stadiums in Europe, that they can see up from the crossbar that it was over the bar, but they can't see down for a 3-point surely that's way off the mark. Like, and even look at, and then we're out at Croke Park again 2 years ago. The Ozzie Gleeson one, like.
That was in the Gaelic Grounds, but I'm not sure if people are fully aware in Delo that like Hawkeye isn't in place for a goal decision, and like we could have a situation where an All Ireland semi final or Ireland final is decided by a decision that you can't go to Hawkeye for. Like I know, like when we played Kilkenny in 2014, Davy Breen nearly had a goal in the first half. The ball lived on the line, and we didn't get it over the line. And people said afterwards, but Hawkeye, but it wasn't in place for goals, but. Again, those key decisions have to be get right because we're just speaking about fine margins and we want the decision to be correct. But then the question, is it in Ennis? Is it in Croke Park? Is it in Park Keeves? Is it in the Gaelic Grounds? And can you use different rules in Croke Park to the Gaelic Grounds or Turles? I suppose that is a question for the GAA. And I suppose one that we'd like to see uniform that's the same for everywhere in every pitch. How feasible is that? And I suppose that's back to our old friend Dollars again, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's the link in though, Tige. You know, I think like if counties are putting so much in, I mean, you know, like that the last match in Munster could be as every bit as important as the All-Ireland final. With all the effort that's going in now, and we've been involved recently enough, I suppose we were both involved in Intercounty up to, you know, did you finish in 15 or 14? 15, was it?
15.
I finished at 14, I'd say, at that level. I mean, Jesus, you know that, you know, That quarterfinal match is every bit as important. My last match, ye came out after I met you in the tunnel and you wired going out to beat Wexford and I down in the dumps after being hammered by Tip. There was two contrasting moments in time. But, you know, that match was every bit as important as if you made that final that year.
100%. It was 16, actually. I was 14, 15, 16. But the last match in the round robin planned for Munster, the way it was for this summer, was Limerick were going playing Tip, right? Like, how crucial could that game have been if it had gone ahead and you're coming down to maybe a small decision to decide which team goes through, not to mind which team kind of stay in the championship. But, like, I come back to... I think there's more can be done. If you look at what's available in the stats, right, and what information you can get nearly down to the speed of the ball, right, I do think that overall there's a bigger picture for the GAA to use technology in a way, whether it's with the ball, whether it's with the grounds, there is definitely a role. And I think we should see, and I think we will see some changes over the next 4 or 5 years here.
Yeah, it probably will evolve. And as you said about the goal and the chip maybe in the ball, but of course then we'd have the likes of Don Logue again thrown in. New balls every chance he got there, and Babs fighting with him to take them all. I suppose, look, we'll never quite solve it, I suppose. But, you know, I think Hawkeye, as you said, I think this is the great thing, how accepting we've become of it, like, and it's brilliant. And I suppose the speed of it in Croke Park, and I think for me, it gave us, when I actually highlighted it as my most memorable moment of the decade, we did a thing in the Sunday game, was the bubbles free in 14, where 82,000 of us scared at a screen where the sponsors fairly got mileage out of it, I tell you. You know, to know it was bubbles long free over the bar, and what a moment that gave us. But like,
what decision would the umpire have made in the absence of Hawkeye, I wonder, for the bubbles free, Dylan? What way would he have gone?
I think
in or out?
Anecdotally, no, I'm not sure. You know, you can never say, but from feedback from Tip guys, Kilkenny guys, and that. Even Jackie Turlow was near enough to the goal, I think, that possibly he'd have gone for a pint. It was that high, and he thought it was over. And I think for a long way, it was over. It was one of those tailors, you know, the big high tail ball. And it might have drifted. And it obviously did. Hawkeye, you know, would have the beam up from there. And that could have been Tipperary All-Ireland champions, Eamon O'Shea, as the winning All-Ireland manager. You know, we know how important Eamon has been, but he'd like him to have won one as manager as well, I'm sure. But there you go. Like, and I know there's a whole pile of things. We also, tennis, as you said, is a great example. And we also missed the John McEnroe tantrums, though, don't we? Where you got to be joking me to the umpire. And, you know, there's a place for technology. We also miss the lunacy as well, don't we?
I'm sure Jackie Turrell would have been in that umpire's ear a little bit more if Hawkeye wasn't there and even having an encouraging word with him telling him it was wide. Like, but yeah, you do miss that. But it still comes back to maybe getting the decisions right, and we're all happy. Like, you see rugby there, they get an awful lot of calls right when they go to the TMO. And I suppose it is a bigger conversation. But I do think that with technology playing such a huge part in training and getting all the stats analysis right, it will play a bigger part in Ireland down the road. I don't see any other way.
Yeah, and look, That has to be accepted, I think. I don't know if rugby, I'm not a fan of rugby, I know you are, but I find that it makes it even slower, to be honest with you. But I suppose the correctness is the big thing. And look at even GA grounds, when you think about it now, you buy your ticket in your Spa or your Centra, wherever, Centra maybe, and you go along and it's you, instead of the old days where you got your ticket pulled in two halves and handed back to you, now your ticket is scanned and boom, and out to you. So obviously technology has come into grounds in ways that we haven't seen before. But just an interesting thing that somebody pointed out, I think Christy O'Connor had it in an Examiner article maybe a couple of months ago back now again. And like that John McGrath goal at that stage, like he asked the question, I think, of the referees committee. I think Dickie might have been involved, maybe Willie Barrett. I'm not sure now. I don't want to be saying anything I say here is complete gospel, because obviously we hear different things. But Brian Hogan caught the ball, came out, cleared it, and John McGrath stuck in the net. But goal disallowed and point given 21 seconds later, okay? But in the meantime, if we'll say the ball came to Michael Breen from the puck out, or whoever it came to, and from nowhere, Dermot O'Keefe came in with a tackle, controversial one, that was red carded. Let's say a bit like the Richie Hogan, divided opinion. And in the meantime, the ref had decided that's a clothesline, you're gone, red card. That red card would stand then, and yet there was a 4-point swing in the game, if you know what I mean. That's another one that I just thought, Jesus, if I was the manager, yeah. You know, and like, okay, it worked in Davey's favour that day, but it worked against him. I don't know if he'd be too happy with all that, would he? Down a man and down a pint. Do you know? It would have been a fair one to take.
It would have been a fair one to take. And the other incident I was going to talk about very briefly again with my Limerick glasses on is the sideline against Kilkenny last year, right? So like replay clearly showed, right, that Dara Dunham's sideline took a touch and went out for a 65, 1 point in the difference. We'd like to think that we would have nailed that 65 and that the game would have gone to extra time. So, like, I don't know. Then, with something like a Hawkeye, VAR, whatever it is, can somebody pick up those type of decisions, and do you ruin, as you said there, kind of the spontaneity of the game? But at the same time, I'm still back to making the right call, and that was wrong call. I definitely would have blamed the linesman there.
Yeah, the linesman, it was incredible. Like, I was in the box that day because you're allowed for the semi-finals. If I was on the nighttime show, I think, or I was on actually the following day, but we were kind of being rushed away. I think we'd go back and do a bit of work on that game or whatever. We were kind of going away as the boys were going on the air. I was on for the following day's game, the Tipping Wexford game. And like as we were going to the boys were getting mic'd up to go back live on the air. You only literally have 90 seconds or whatever, you know. And I said, Jesus, lads, I think... And you're in a box, of course, and the people beside you are just, you know, in an ordinary box. The Sky one is one side of you, and then there's people just, I don't know who owns the box next door, but or who has the lease on it or whatever. But they were starting to say to us, that was deflected. And I did say to Cyril Farrell in live time, that Jesus, Cyril, that took a weird flight, that ball, but you could hardly see it, TJ, unless you were in the Cusack at the time. But of course, then we saw it so clearly. And my biggest issue nearly there was how near Killian Buckley was when it was being taken. Do you know, in hindsight, like he should not have, it should have been a retaken line ball at the minimum with where he was, or a throw-in, or you know what the rule is there if a fella's too close. A retake, I presume. And of course, Dara Donovan is so good at him, there's a chance he'd have put that over as well.
Yeah, but I suppose just to follow on, the fine margins, that's what we are down to, and we're trying to get all those decisions right, and it's probably easy for us to sit on the outside and be hard on officials and referees and linesmen and all that, but we still want the decision to be right. But I do think there's a role for technology. What you said there about a ball with a chip in it, I think that might help somebody upstairs in the referee's ear. That'll definitely help. Getting all those decisions right is the way forward.
Can I just say there, I was talking to Mossy Mullins, the tip man behind that digital chip in the ball, and he said it could even, if the GA want to take it far enough, it could even detect the hand pass, you know, basically if a hand pass has been hand passed correctly, in terms of it'll detect whether the ball has been touched twice out of the hand, you know. Like, would you really want to go that far?
We need to get Derek on next week and Don Logue for that, I think, Larry. Jesus, imagine if it went that far, though, lads. Would we have anything to talk about Sunday night in the pub or the Sunday game, for that matter, if it was absolutely perfect and it wasn't down to a decision by an official, Larry. What would your take be on it?
Well, I mean, as far as I can see, isn't there, like, surely in nearly every single goal or point in hurling, there's a half foul somewhere in the move anyway, isn't there? Like, you'd probably find, you could pick a hole in nearly every score in a match.
Steps.
If you wanted to go to VAR. Steps. There's nearly always five steps somewhere, isn't there?
So there's no day, like, that you know, you don't, you know, appear, or you're on a Sunday game and you don't get a tweet or something from somebody. There's no game. What about the steps before the Galway goal or before the Waterford point to put them a point ahead or before whatever? There's no day that doesn't come in, and there's no day, I suppose, you're going to keep everyone happy. But I think the chip in the ball thing, and I actually think that came in long, or was proposed, or was out there from a study from a lad in UCG long before we heard of Hawkeye coming in. Larry, if I'm right on that, do you remember that?
There was something ages ago, all right, but I know these lads have been testing it in the Super 11s for the last 2 or 3 years. And now they have it to a stage now where basically you can test the speed of a shot and the strength of a shot and the distance and all that. But they would, to take it to the next level, if they wanted to, you could detect lots of other things, including using it for Hawkeye as well, I believe, which would be probably cheaper than the system to have it played.
There are some of those offside decisions in the soccer, even with VAR, when it was introduced, about the top of his shoulder was just offside or whatever it is. Like, getting into those type of technicalities that Larry spoke about there, that definitely is not a road you want to go. You want to get the overall decision right, but yeah, it could cause some problems, all right.
It's far the better, I think, if we can get it right, but there's a time and a place for it, I think, and a little bit that we keep the balance between the officials having to say and constantly stopping the game.
Discussion for another day, but the game plan, I'm just wondering, where is the next transition, or what coaches are looking at, or where do you see it? If you were back in the managerial coaching hot seat there now of one of the major teams, which is very possible in the next couple of years, Dello, I'm sure.
No,
game plan would you be pontificating, or Where is the game heading? One of the things I noticed, not sure if you noticed, I was at a league game between Limerick and Tip this year with Brian Hogan, speaking of him, was the height of some of his puck outs. He was like giving the players out the field that extra second to get underneath it, where he was really crowding it. So I'm not sure if that was going to be a new tactic for someone like Tipperary this year, but it's trying. Like, I know it's definitely going to be possession related, but where is the game of hurling going, and what is the new game plan?
Well, you know what? I don't know, TJ, and I think the chances of me being involved anywhere are very slim. So that's one element to your question. But yeah, I actually think it could be a bit like fashion, do you know? And I would have seen that from the years I had the sports shop, that stuff that when I started in 96 to when I finished maybe in 11, stuff that was, why you wearing that, would be slagged off at and it was very funny with some of the parents coming in, that they bought a lovely jacket for the son. I remember one particular parent, he's a gas man, I actually only met him last week, and he bought his son a Man United jacket, but it was one of those kind of puff jackets, if you know what I mean, you know? And they're kind of back in. Like, I remember we did an outside broadcast for one of the live matches last year, myself and Derek McGrath. We were wearing very similar jackets. Probably suited myself and Derek. Now, not the new look, Derek, obviously, but probably suited me anyway, Teej. But I remember your man said he was going into first year in St. Flannan's, and the father came in, and he said, Jesus, Dale, he wasn't looking for it back, because he said he still loved it with the United stuff on it and all. He says, but the young lad got a bit of a doon on Monday, he said, from some of the other lads from Innes. Said, where are you going with the lagging jacket? I won't even mention his surname in case it got out there, you know. But then all of a sudden, 4 or 5 years later, you couldn't keep those stocked, you know, because all it took was somebody who was, you know, big on, I suppose, social media was just coming in as I was finishing up maybe. But, you know, TV even, and some of the pop stars and that. And I think, look, where did you see go? I take you back to the Leinster final last year, TJ, where you're saying Davy Fitz, maybe the king of the innovation and the new stuff and the sweeper and the way that has evolved as well, with, you know, Kevin Foley coming up nearly as a 7 forward at times now. But like, where did you see Davy Fitz puck out strategy where,
yeah,
you know, Fanning boomed the ball down into the edge of the square? Now, we probably know if there was a JJ and a Tommy there and an Noel Hickey there, that maybe that system wouldn't have been in place. We saw how Damien Fitzhenry broke it up maybe in 2004 by pinging the ball into space and runners everywhere. But where did you see that coming out of last year? I'm inside in the RT box watching that going, Jesus, what's this going on? Like, but the obviously instruction was Conor McDonald get under it, definitely at least break it, and we're going to be savage onto the breaks. And I've no doubt they caught Kilkenny on the day on that, that they weren't expecting that.
Yeah, and I suppose that's back to the very start of the conversation and maybe looking at the stats and analysis, they obviously would have fed into that maybe Kilkenny weren't winning as many breaking balls. I think I read a stat there recently, believe it or not, right, that puckouts, that only 5% of the modern-day puckout is won clean. So that's dipping. Like, so it's a fair stat, but like winning that breaking ball off the puck out was one that they bought into. But as I said, I just saw this year Brian Hogan hitting the ball with just massive, you know, he's a fair belt of a ball anyway, but just massive air in it, which gave an awful lot of players time to get in around it. Then that breaking ball and that mad piece winning the breaking ball and then trying to get a score out of it. But he's just trying to work out where they're going and I suppose where the next phase of the inter-county game is, and I'm sure that all those coaches are out there today trying to get themselves that maybe 1% edge again on opposition. And I suppose the game of hurling, while we said it's still the same, there's always people looking for that little bit, whether it's technology, stats, or just a little edge, there's always looking for something.
Yeah, and I think we'll devote a whole pod on this. We'll get Mr. Lander's Wi-Fi back up. But I think, go back to your point, TJ, and I think the key to this is knowing your players, knowing your strength, and that's where the real top coaches will win. And I would imagine there's a quick one now last year that we talked about that quickly, that Wexford tactic. Obviously, some of those guys I mentioned weren't there. Hugh Lawler was new. I think Hugh Lawler could be an outstanding, had a great year last year. Jesus, had a great year. Now, don't, I'm not passing any aspersions on Hugh, but I think, you know, even Tip would have evolved. I think you take Bonner out of the half forward line, like Liam would have to sit down with Brian and possibly Bonner, even though he was on crutches, and saying, look, Bonner's not there anymore. We know how good Bonner's in the air, even if he doesn't win it. But geez, you won't see too many wing backs or centre backs catching it off Bonner. You'd have to evolve, you know, if you've a Niall O'Mara in there, then that he's a different type player, that he'd want a different style of puck out. I think there's a full podcast in that one for us, Teej.
There is, Dillo. And it could be as much as managing your weaknesses as managing your strengths, because if you can't win a ball aerially at 10, 11 and 12, well, then the puck out has to change, it has to evolve, and it has to be different. And I suppose that's what we're talking about in the modern game, is that people do. I know that when you're sitting in the stand, and certainly for me, I hear, like, when you see the way Limerick are trying to play and you understand what they're trying to do, and I hear people behind me say, jeez, we not hit the ball long or whatever. But if you look long, the opposition have two players over, and it's just trying to get that full understanding of, look, this is what they're trying to do. Like, from Limerick's point of view, in fairness, we hit the ball long for 40-odd years and we couldn't win in All Ireland. At least this one worked, you know what I mean? So stick with it and stay with the plan.
Yeah, look, 100%, and brilliant to have you again, TJ. And we'll chat again. Hopefully, we can keep it going for people over the next few weeks and kill an hour for them with interest and stuff. Hopefully, we are. We welcome your feedback, even if it's negative. We welcome it. You know, there will be people who disagree, and I think, you know, you're dead right. And I still hear it again. You drive the ball, but I think if you keep winning All Ireland, National League, and Munster Championship, TJ, they'll be quieting. So, look, folks, keep safe. Stay inside until we're told to do otherwise. And I think try and obey the laws. And look, we'll try and keep it going for you here as long as we can. We're doing our best. We're trying to be innovative. And TJ, I'm going to give you the credit for coming up with a lot of the material as well for today's show. Great ideas. And we're all tapping each other for stuff to come up with that will really, people will enjoy, I think. And that's the key to it. So, great stuff, Larry. Great stuff, TJ.
Thanks, Dillo.